Well, good morning, Central Church. How you guys doing? Obviously, Memorial Day, we wouldn't even have the freedom of religion to come in and meet if we didn't have those that sacrificed and paid the ultimate price. So we remember them. It was about Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, that God changed this message for me. I had 100% the last week and a half been preparing a whole separate message on grace. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And so, celebrate recovery, as Pastor Ryan was talking about. There's a slide with that graphic there. Celebrate recovery isn't just for addicts. It's anything that we need recovering from. And this comes from Saddleback Church. Rick Warren, the pastor of Saddleback Church, says this: there are two types of people, those that know they need recovery and those that are in denial. And so that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today is dealing with denial. Everybody has something going on, and Celebrate Recovery uses the phrase hurts, habits, and hangups. It covers so much in general. It's anything that takes us away from God, anything that takes us away from a healthy relationship, anything that comes between and tries to destroy. It's the things that we sweep under the rug, put to the back of our minds. We try to forget like it never happened. We try to bottle it up. And then we wear this mask, this facade. We become somebody different. It's a false relationship, an addiction, and I can go on and on. But my personal experience, my dad was a pastor since 1978, and I grew up as a pastor's kid. And there's two types of pastor's kids in this world. There's the pastor's kid that goes to church camp and Sunday school and has all the trophies from the Bible quizzes and wears the suit and tie and goes to church, and he's like the perfect example. And then there's the pastor's kid who causes all the trouble, gets arrested, and gets involved in drugs and just runs wild. I was that guy. I was that pastor's kid. And I resented my dad for going into ministry because I always thought he put the church before his family. He worked full-time. And he preached full-time, and I never saw him. And so I didn't want anything to do with it. And then on top of that, I saw people who were supposed to be the Christians turn around and stab my dad in the back the moment they didn't like what he spoke about, or they didn't think he was doing what they should. And so I was like, hypocrite, you know, you claim to be a Christian. If that's what a Christian is, I don't want nothing but don't want it. So I ran. And from a very young age, from like 6 to 7 years old, up and through my adult life, I struggled with pornography and substance abuse and anger and hurt and just rage, literal rage. I don't know how many doors I've paid for and replaced and windows. My sister would lock me out of the house when my parents were gone. Sometimes she did it out of spite. Sometimes she did because she was scared. But I would literally not just break the door down, I'd rip the frame out of the wall. And I was mean. And it served me well when I got into the drug scene, because I was the guy that you didn't want to see at your front door if you didn't pay. But those are some of the masks that I used. I used to cope with feelings. I dealt with rejection because I was the preacher's kid. And every time we moved, I'd have to make new friends. And new friends were like, oh, preacher's kid, you know, we don't want to be friends with him. So I would do the extra. I would go the extra mile. I would always do anything that people were afraid to do on the bad side, just so I could be cool. And this morning, I want you to kind of look at denial as a mask. As we look at dealing with denial, something in your life is growing, it's festering, it's been there, and you're not acknowledging it. And so I'm asking you today to take a look within and say, what is my mask? And maybe, just maybe today, you can help remove it. I want you to take a look at this video clip, and then we'll break it down.
Somebody there?
Somebody.
Who said that?
Downplay the innocent with me.
You've known all along.
Where are you?
Follow the cold shiver running down your spine.
Wait,
I don't understand.
Did you think it was coincidence? So many good things all happening for you. All for you, Norman.
What do you want?
To say what you won't. To do what you can't. To remove those in your way.
The board members. You killed them.
We killed them.
We?
Remember your little accident in the laboratory?
Performance enhancers.
Bingo. Me, your greatest creation. Bringing you what you've always wanted. Power beyond your wildest dreams. And it's only the beginning. There's only one who can stop us. Or imagine if he joined us.
You see, Norman Osborn was the president and the founder of Oscorp, and he was being kicked out by the board members because his life was in shambles. You see him at the very beginning of this, is the first thing he's doing is running to a substance. He's coping with either the thoughts going through his mind or the emotions that he's dealing with. And then the goblin comes into the story, and the first thing the goblin says was, "Don't play innocent with me. You've known all along." And he's playing like he doesn't understand, and he starts to look around a room full of masks, and he's thinking he's going to find somebody hiding there, but ultimately it's his reflection in the mirror. And this conversation says, "What do you want?" And the goblin replies, "To say what you want, to do what you can't, and to remove those in your way." And he immediately shifts the blame. He says, "You killed him." He's like, "No, we killed him." He said, "I am your greatest creation." Remember the substance, that enhancers. We use enhancers in our life. And he said, "I'll give you power beyond your wildest dreams." And the things that we run to, those performance enhancers, those substances, the relationships, the different ways that we cope, they're masks, and they promise more than they can ever give. Have you ever heard the phrase, 10 foot tall and bulletproof? It doesn't happen. You try that in a small town, it ain't gonna work. Beer goggles, you wake up, and that filter made that girl pretty. Empty promises that can never be delivered and disappoint as soon as they're gone. Now, hopefully, this message will help you reveal your mask and maybe remove it. But maybe you've tried multiple times. Maybe you know what your mask is already. But you've had to face it, and it's scary, it's daunting, it's a little overwhelming. And I get it, because I've been there. And there's a quote by Jen Ellison that says, "Denial, as any addict in recovery would tell you, is not defined as knowing something and pretending you don't, but it's failing to see it at all." Because when you're in the pit, when you're blinded by false hope, you're numbed by the senses, you lie to yourself. And you start to believe these lies so much that you can't see where you're going wrong. It's a sickness. And denial is the most predictable response of all mankind. It's because we have a habit of creating fiction so real that we believe it wholeheartedly that we ignore the truth that we really can't accept. It's a way to cope. Denial says, "If you really knew me, if you knew who I really was, you wouldn't like me, much less love me. You probably avoid me at all costs. So I'd put on the mask and I wear the mask that so much that not even my loved ones know who I am, the real me. Because I don't want them to see what's really going on." Husbands and wives, they're dealing with these secrets, and they struggle, and that relationship every day loses a piece at a time from doubt and dishonesty and lies until there's nothing left but broken pieces of broken hearts. But it's the lies that we tell ourselves that are the worst. We live in denial of the hurt, habit, or hang-up, and we do it maybe because we're afraid, We're afraid of not finding love. We're afraid of causing disappointment to those we eagerly seek approval from. Maybe we tell ourselves that even if we do find love, it won't last. I'm afraid to get my heart out because I've been hurt and I don't want to get hurt again. Fear of losing that love, being unhappy, ending up alone, getting hurt. Ezra chapter 9, verse 6 says, I am too ashamed and disgraced, my God, to lift up my face to you because our sins are higher than our heads and our guilt has reached the heavens. Sometimes sin becomes so overwhelming we can't even pull our head up out of water. I've even said the phrase that sometimes we need to reach down farther than people can reach up. They need more than just a hand. I know I did. My guilt and my shame, even after I came back, me and my wife, after about a year and a half, almost 2 years together, she found out what I was really hiding. And it almost cost us our marriage. We separated for about 3 months. And my wife was a praying woman, so she prayed. And I think I'm back here because of her. And she was my saving grace, you know. And after we got back, and I got back into church, I got clean. 5 years into our marriage, I was still dealing with shame and guilt. And I really didn't have the courage to tell her everything. Because I was afraid if I really got honest and I told her everything, it might cost me my marriage. And I just got it back. But the problem was, because I hid that so long, I was doing more damage, and it literally almost cost my marriage again because of the lies and the deceit and the deception and the dishonesty. You see, Jeremiah 8, chapter 8, verses 4 and 6, when people fall down, don't they get up again? When they discover they're on the wrong road, don't they turn back? Then why do these people stay on their destructive path? Why do people of Jerusalem refuse to turn back? They cling tightly to their lies, and they will not turn around. I listen to their conversations, and I don't hear a word of truth. Is anyone sorry for doing wrong? And does anyone say what a terrible thing I've done? I struggle with conviction a lot. The little devil and the little angel on your shoulders, they were constantly going back and forth in my mind. And I was afraid that I had too many stumbling blocks in my life to come back. I was afraid I was going down the wrong road too far that I couldn't turn around. But see, God has a way of taking that mess and making a message. He's turning those stumbling blocks into stepping stones. We just have to realize it. And what are those things in our life? Well, Galatians chapter 5, 19 through 21 lists just a handful of them. And it says, the acts of the flesh are obvious. Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissension, factions, envy, drunkenness, and orgies and the like. Anybody struggle with anything on that list? I know I have. And if it's not on that list, he covers it and the like. Because it's more than just these. It's anything that pulls you away. Anything that pulls us away from God or causes broken relationships. You see, when we put the mask of denial on, we confuse what's right with what's wrong. The first step to recovery is admitting it. Jeremiah 6:14 says, you can't heal a wound by saying it's not there. You get shot in the leg and you got an artery that's bleeding out. If you just ignore it, it's going to kill you. Eventually, you're going to bleed out and die. But if you take care of that wound, if you have a surgeon look at that wound and you get it stitched up and you recover from the wound, you'll heal. There may be a scar and it'll be a visible reminder of what happened, but you'll be healed. So I'm going to give you six quick things that I think denial does. Okay? Number one, it disables our feelings. Repressing our feelings can freeze emotions and we become numbed and seem to have no feelings at all. A thought, emotion, or trigger comes up, and we don't know how to deal with it healthily, so we try to suppress it. We push it to the back of our minds, and we bottle it up. But eventually, that bottle explodes, and it's usually on the people that we love the most, the people that don't deserve it. 2 Peter 2, 18 and 19 says, for speaking loud boasts of folly, they entice by sensual passions of the flesh those who are barely escaping from those who live in error. They promise them freedom, but they themselves are slaves to corruption. For whatever overcomes a person, to that he is enslaved. The they here that they're talking about in this passage is the false prophets. The false prophets were telling these people, hey, it's okay to do what you're doing. It's okay to kind of enjoy the sin because you can come over here and you can atone for your sin and you can pray and you can sacrifice and we're good to go. But they themselves were in the same boat. They were doing the same things. That's enablers. The they here is enablers. The people that are going to tell you that there is an escape within whatever vice that has you enslaved. Whatever hurt, whatever habit, or whatever hang-up that we're dealing with. And this is where a vicious sin cycle takes place. We have a thought, an emotion, or a trigger that comes up, and we turn to the wrong people or the wrong things for a temporary solution. A temporary solution then becomes a bigger problem, and then we feel guilt and shame and regret, and so we try to cope by going to another temporary solution. Temporary solution becomes a problem. Problem, we run to stuff, things. And the cycle just keeps going on, and you get stuck. How do we get out of it? This mask of guilt, this mask of shame, this mask of denial. We put that mask on, and we enjoy it for a bit because sin is fun for a season. But eventually, the fun runs out. The people around us are giving us accolades and attaboys and temporary happiness through relationships that we pretend are real. But until we remove that mask, there's no way to experience true emotion and real relationship the way that they were meant to be. Because when we wear that mask, only the mask is receiving those emotions, those feelings, that love. It's false identity. You're building a relationship with somebody they don't know. You see, eventually they're going to see a glimpse of the real you, the real me. Maybe it's when we're dealing with a raw emotion that we haven't learn to deal well with. Maybe it's a hurt. Maybe it's a thought that was just constantly running through your mind. Maybe it was after a bender. But sometimes, eventually, they're going to catch a glimpse of the real you. And I don't know if anybody's heard this phrase, but I have, and it stuck with me and it hurt me. It says, I don't even know who you are. It's because they've been used to seeing the mask. They don't know the real you because that's all you've let them see. It's all you have allowed them to see. They've built their relationship with that false identity. Denial rears its ugly head, and we have blame shifting and misunderstandings, failure to communicate, even a failure to see our contribution to the destruction. The second thing denial does is it caused energy lost. Energy lost. Anxiety is a byproduct of denial, and it causes us to waste precious time and energy running from our past, running from our problems, hiding our habits, covering up lies with more lies. And we live in fear. We live in the fear of the what ifs, a fear of getting caught, fear of being vulnerable, fear of failure, fear of getting hurt, fear of being alone. I did the same thing. I would go to extreme measures to make sure that my wife would never find out, pick the perfect hiding spot. Nobody would know where my stash was. I'd take extra clothes, hand sanitizer, Febreze, cologne, toothpaste, gum, mints, anything I could to make myself not smell like anything. And she was none the wiser, or so I thought. And we do that. But if we put half as much energy in the time that we spent trying to hide things into building the relationships instead of destroying the relationships, we build it, how much better would it be? If you've got time to watch porn, you've got time to read the Bible. If you've got time to go to the bar, you've got time to go to a connect group. You've got time to call your hookup, you've got time to pray. You got time to do negative, you got time to do positive. It's where are you going to put your energy? Number three, it negates growth. We can have healthy relationships that grow if we would just be honest. But that mask of denial hides our hurts, habits, emotions, hang-ups. We have no idea how to grow closer to God or people because we're constantly putting space in between us. We're pushing people away. We're keeping them at arm's length. We're putting fences and walls up. And we're hiding who we really are. There's no courtship anymore. We go into a relationship, a new relationship, a new friendship, automatically with a mask on. There's no courtship. You go on one or two dates and then you shack up because maybe it just makes financial sense. Or you finally say, well, you know, we'll just live together. We don't have to get married. It's not a commitment. I don't want to go that far. Maybe it's just another way that you find that intimacy is another way to cope. But either way, sometimes you get freaked out, scared, closed off. You tell yourself, I'll never tell anyone anything and I'll take it to my grave. But see, God will never waste a hurt. He's going to take exactly what you're going through right now and he's going to help somebody in the future exactly where you are. He's going to use your mess and take it into a message. He wants to lift the weight that you carry. He wants to offer you freedom from the chains that bind you. In Psalm 107, it says, "Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. He saved them from their distress. He brought them out of darkness and gloom and broke their chains apart." He wants to give you freedom today. Number four, it isolates you from God. It isolates us from God. We feel alone and we try to fix things ourselves. We try to deal with those hurts, those habits, those hangups alone. And we end up going deeper and deeper and deeper into the problem. You see, it impairs our vision. It distorts our thinking. And we start making more decisions and more choices to put it right back into that sin cycle. 1 John chapter 1, verses 5 through 8 says, "God is light, and there is absolutely no darkness in him. And if we say we have fellowship with him, yet we walk in darkness, we're lying and we're not practicing the truth. But if we walk in the light, as he himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from all sin. And if we say we have no sin, then we're deceiving ourselves and the truth is not within us. We are as sick as our secrets. And there's no way to grow until we step out of denial and into truth. Number five, it alienates us from our relationships. It alienates us from our relationships. Denial will tell us that we're getting away with it, but we're really not. It'll say nobody knows, but they do. And if they don't, they're going to find out eventually. Because you can only lie so much, you can only hide so long, you will slip up. Because those lies that you told to cover the other lies to cover the other lies are going to come out to find out they're lies. You can't keep up with the lies. Trust me, I know. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Sin will take you farther than you wanted to go. It'll keep you longer than you wanted to stay, and it will cost you way more than you ever wanted to pay. It is a relationship killer. And it will take you to the grave. Ephesians 4:25 says, "So what this adds up to then is this. No more lies. No more pretense. Tell your neighbor the truth. And in Christ's body, we're all connected to each other. And after all, when you lie to others, you end up lying to yourself." You see, that's why connect relationally is one of our core values. We're not designed to do life alone. We are not designed to do life alone. Number six, it lengthens our pain. Denial gives us a false sense of protection from pain, but in reality, it only festers and grows, and it turns into shame, guilt, and regret. We tend to do the same things over and over and over, expecting a different result. Maybe this time, it'll solve it. That's the definition of insanity. Every time you run to the same problem, you try to solve it with the same issue, and it just keeps coming back. There's always a bottom of a bottle. Now, my personal story, CR has not only helped me understand a little bit more of myself over the years because I've been involved in other CRs, but this one in particular, we've been going through leadership trainings and meetings, and we've been doing step studies as leaders, and it's revealed some things to me. About a month and a half ago, I realized there was something that I haven't taken care of in over 21 years. My wife knew, my family knew. And it's not like I was hiding it, but I didn't deal with it. I had thought that I had forgiven myself and I had moved past it because I confessed it, but I never went to the person. And so after 21 plus years, I had to make amends. And there's freedom in that. There's a weight, there's a burden that's lifted when you go to the person and you make amends. You know, we have to be open and honest with ourselves and with God. Psalms 30, 2 and 3 says, "O Lord my God, I pleaded with you and you gave me health again. You brought me back from the brink of the grave, from death itself, and here I am alive." I was a walking dead man. I was facing life in prison if I got caught, or 6 feet under. And I don't know which one would have been better. We have to be open to someone. We have to be vulnerable. We have to be able to confess and admit it. Because James chapter 5, verses 15 and 16 says, "Therefore, confess your sins one to another. Pray for one another." Not gossip. Don't take what your neighbor says, and as he's opening up to you, don't go and tell the other guy. He's telling you that in confidence. But it says, "Tell one another, pray for one another, so that you might be healed." Be healed. Pastor Rick Warren says, "If you want to be forgiven, confess to God. If you want to be healed, confess to one another." What he's saying here is that you confess only to God and you can never fully heal because eventually you'll pick it back up. When you don't tell somebody who can help keep you accountable, you don't truly confess it out to someone, you're still holding on to it. It's still a secret. It's only between you and God, right? No, God knew before you even told him. You can admit it to God, but you got to admit it to somebody else. Confession. See, if you hold on to it long enough, it's going to weigh you down again. But we're not designed to do life alone. Get connected. That's where healing happens in community. Find a connect group. Get into a common interest group. Heck, go riding and let's go get some barbecue. It's a good place to pig out. John 8, 31, 32, it says, if you continue in my word, then you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Today, I'm asking you to do two things. Remove your mask. Be open and honest, number one, with yourself and God. And number two, step out of denial and into truth. Are you willing to deal with denial today?